Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Rand Tool Press for the week ending September 30th. It's a little bittersweet today reading that the Rand Tool Press will cease publication. After 145 years, the Rand Tool Press is ceasing publication with the September 30th issue. Champaign Multimedia Group publisher, Executive Vice President Paul Barrett, said the decision was strictly a business one. All of us in the newspaper business hate to see any newspaper close, Barrett said. The fact of the matter is, in order for a newspaper to survive these days, it has to have the support of the community it serves. The previous owners tried for years to make it viable, and we saw for firsthand in November of last year just what a challenge they faced. With less than 600 subscribers, the press was not going to survive. We have been able to keep it open for almost a year, but the losses just continued to mount. We can serve the people of Rand Tool 6 days a week with our new county section that now appears in the News Gazette every day. The press's own Dave Hinton will become the editor of that section to give Rand Tool a leg up in coverage on a daily rather than a weekly basis. Community Media Group purchased the newspaper last year. Starting in the late 50s, it was distributed as a free newspaper that went to every area household until recently. Local residents were not obligated to pay their news carriers, but many of them did. The new company opted to shift to a subscription plan. Subscription totals began to slowly increase, but retail advertising, the lifeblood of any newspaper, waned, especially in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. Established in 1875, the newspaper has called several buildings home. During its heyday, it operated on East Harmon Drive with a full print shop. During the newspaper's centennial year, the press boasted a staff of nearly 60 people. During recent years, the staff size dwindled to just a handful, and the newspaper moved to its new location in the 200 block of East Sangamon Avenue, just about a block from its original home. The press was originally known as the Rand Tool News, started in 1874 or 75 by Abram Davis Cross and Harvey E. Bullock, and was the new town's first newspaper. The village has been home to four newspapers: the Rand Tool Weekly Press, Rand Tool Weekly News, the Rantoolian, and the Rand Tool Journal. The press survived two major downtown fires in 1899 and 1901. When Cross and Bullock began to publish the newspaper, Rand Tool, with a population of 827, had been incorporated for just 5 years. The land was fertile, swampy, and level. Not much is known about Bullock. He was a supporter of the Havana, Rand Tool, and Eastern Railroad. Cross was an active citizen of the community, born in 1828 in Danville, Pennsylvania. His father fought in the Texas War for Independence and the Mexican War, where he lost his life. After migrating to South America and later helping to build a bridge over the Chagres River in Panama in 1851, he moved to Rand Tool 2 years later. An ardent Democrat, he campaigned for James K. Polk for president. He ran for the legislature in 1885, but lost. He was appointed Rand Tool postmaster in 1885 by Grover Cleveland. Cross was a charter member of Rand Tool Lodge AF and AM. He died at age 78 and was the second oldest continuous member of Rand Tool. There are conflicting reports of when the press was formed. One account said C.W. Gullick and Frank E. Pinkerton later bought the News and consolidated it with the Journal in either 1877 or 78. The new paper was called the Rantoolian, and a short time later changed to the Rand Tool Weekly Press. Pinkerton served as editor and publisher. It was published every Saturday. Pinkerton's stated editorial policy read, "The Rand Tool Weekly Press, unfettered by party, unbiased by creed, unknown by power, and unbribed by greed." Another account indicated it wasn't until 1919 when Charles and Willard Gray sold the News to F.E. Riker of the Press, and the two papers merged. The newspaper has known its share of bad times. At 8 a.m. Monday, February 13, 1899, the fire whistle sounded the alarm of a blaze that quickly destroyed a major part of downtown, including the press and the news offices. With the temperature of 15 below zero, area citizens fought the fire by feeding a barrel with a hand brigade of water buckets while the Paxton Fire Company pumped water. J.C. Weir and J.M. Collison bought the press after the fire of 1899. The press was again a victim of fire 2 years later. News coverage was much different then. Students of today would have been appalled at the practices of the period from 1874 to 1901, when one of the regular features of the newspaper was to publish all students' attendance and grades. For years, newspapers relied on two-line local items such as, Mrs. Emma Brown is quite ill, or Willis Holder wields the birch at Spring Lake. Since 1919, only one paper, the Press, has been published in Rantoul. Glenn Hansen bought the paper in 1953 from Sid Morgan and oversaw its greatest period of growth. Said Hansen, I bought the Rantoul Press at a time when the printing industry was soon to face a tech revolution. Worst of all, I was totally unprepared for the events to follow in the next year or so. When he bought the press, it was headquartered on Sangamon Avenue in the heart of downtown Rantoul. And despite the town booming with the construction of new schools and new public utilities, the press was nearly bankrupt. To get to our office, we had a 20-foot dark hallway which led to a room about 14 feet by 18 feet, Hansen wrote, in the 1975 centennial edition of the paper. Here, four of us worked in close harmony. The shop itself was about 30 feet deep to the rear of the building and took the whole rear of the building measuring about 50 feet. In Hansen's early days of ownership, the press held a subscription drive by sponsoring a contest in which each new subscriber was entered with a chance to win the grand prize, a new Chevrolet Bel Air from Rogers Chevrolet. List price, $2,100. We couldn't have had the drawing if Mr. Ernest Rogers had not graciously agreed to furnish the car and take payment in the form of advertising over several years, Hansen said. Mrs. Marion Milbrandt won the car, while Mrs. Beatrice Apke won the second prize of $500. The press added nearly 1,200 subscribers, giving it almost as many in town as the Champaign News Gazette. We could now offer our businessmen an effective avenue of advertising, Hansen said. The decision to build a new facility on Harmon Drive in East Rantoul came in 1957. The company bought 2 acres and thereon built a 6,000-square-foot building. Just as big a decision was the one in which the press stopped selling subscriptions to the paper except for those out of the area and delivering the paper free to every household in Rantoul, Chanute Air Force Base, Ludlow, Thomasboro, Penfield, Gifford, Dewey, and Fisher. This decision was somewhat revolutionary, and we became, I believe, the only downstate free newspaper at this time, Hansen said. 2 years later, at the insistence of merchants, the press began publishing twice a week, on Mondays and Saturdays. The arrangement, which was in effect for a year and a half, was a fiasco, and the newspaper lost about $6,000. The press then began publishing it on a weekly basis again, on Wednesdays. In the 1960s, the press went to offset printing. Typesetting and printing changed dramatically over the life of the press. When newspapers first started, all typesetting was done by hand. Each letter was an individual piece of type that had to be placed in position one by one. Later, the linotype was developed that made typesetting much easier. It ushered in a revolution in printing. News compositors could type onto a keyboard and solid lines of lead type would be cast in lead slugs. In 1969, the newspaper bought its first photo typesetter, an electronic marvel, Hansen said. The new machine could set 25 lines of type a minute and had the capability of deciding itself where a hyphen was needed at the end of a line. The typist could intermix 3 different typefaces. It had 9 lenses we could use to give type sizes from 6-point to 18-point. Hansen called the cost of the new equipment staggering and frightening. It cost $23,000, more than 4 times the total worth of the equipment in the shop only 16 years earlier. 3 years later, however, the equipment was obsolete and was worth only $4,000. By contrast, with the advent of personal computers, the days of the typesetter are long gone. All news copy is not only set on these much smaller machines by the reporters who cover the news, Newspaper pages are also designed on them. In January 1971, the company won the contract to print the University of Illinois' Daily Illini. It printed the paper, one of the largest university papers in the country, with an average of 28 tab-sized pages and a circulation of more than 10,000 for many years. 2 years later, the company won the contract to print the Chanute paper, which necessitated another addition to the Harmon Drive building. By 1975, the circulation of the press had reached nearly 13,000. It reached almost every home in a 400-square-mile area. News from area towns had colorful names, such as Fisher Findings, Penfield Prattle, Harwood Howells, Gifford Gossip, Thomasboro Topics, Champagne Cream, and Ludlow Locals. It is believed Hansen owned the press the longest, 22 years, with Arthur Morgan close behind at 21 years. In 1975, Hansen sold the paper to John P. McGough through the Sacramento Union newspaper. The News Gazette bought the paper in 2004. Pleasant Acres awarded $2,900 grant by Midwest Dairy for Fuel Up to Play 60. Pleasant Acres Elementary has been awarded $2,900 to support healthy eating and physical activity initiatives as a part of the Fuel Up to Play 60 program, which encourages students to eat healthy, be active, and implement positive changes in their schools and communities. Fed Up to Play 60 is an Fuel Up to Play 60 is an in-school nutrition and physical activity program launched by National Dairy Council, Midwest Dairy, and the NFL in collaboration with the United States Department of Agriculture. Pleasant Acres Elementary was selected from among hundreds of schools across the country that applied for funding to help them incorporate sustainable health and wellness initiatives and improvements in their schools and communities. The nationwide funding program offers schools up to $4,000 to help them increase awareness of and access to nutrient-rich foods and physical activity opportunities for students. Funding for this competitive program is provided by Midwest Dairy. Funds for Fuel Up to Play 60 provide support for a variety of activities and tools, such as food service equipment, nutrition, and physical education materials, student and staff incentives, staff development, and overall Fuel Up to Play 60 implementation. Pleasant Acres Elementary will use the funds to create a school garden, virtual field trips, and projects to promote healthy eating in collaboration with Ag in the Classroom, and a physical activity program called iMove to promote movement at recess and increase their daily activity. Students will work with Abby Olson, Director of Health and Wellness, as well as school leaders to promote, engage, and participate in initiatives. And now from J. Ackerman Werner, some things you might not know about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Living in the Washington, D.C. bubble, I have heard a lot of rumors that never make the national news. It has always fascinated me. It was one of the reasons why I started writing my first book. The realization that you are not 6 degrees away from the White House, but two or three steps away, simply boggles the brain. At least for this Midwest bumpkin. However, the outcome is still the same. The same as that game you played in grade school. You know the one. The game where the teacher whispers a secret to the first student of each row. You passed it on with such flair. You repeated every word with clarity and confidence. Then you heard that jumbled mess coming out of the mouth of the last student. Well, Washington is no different. They're like any family, office or PTA meeting, filled with updates and polite chit-chat. And don't forget listening to someone else's conversation. The only difference is the location. It's the nation's capital. Okay, you ask, what is your point? It is more of an introduction than a point. I would like to talk about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Not the media icon, but the everyday legend that people saw around Washington, D.C. daily. Justice Ginsburg served on the Supreme Court from 1993 until 2020. She was the second female justice, joining Sandra Day O'Connor, August 10, 1993. She even served on the Supreme Court as the only female justice for about 3 years when Justice O'Connor retired and before Justice Sonia Sotomayor and Justice Elena Kagan joined. That is some of the official information related to Justice Ginsburg. I wanted to tell you a little more about the hometown Washington, D.C. chit-chat that may or may not appear in the newspaper. There are probably a lot of people who know her better and have a more direct one degree or no separation from her. I just know people who have that 2 or 3 degree separation and have seen her around town at different functions. She was enormously respected in this extremely political arena, something that is hard to do in this town. Her body was fragile, but her mind and personality were sharp and polite. She loved the opera and had even dressed in costume with her dear friend and associate justice, Antonin Scalia. They were even known to have participated with the background actors in an opera presentation. She was often seen in the Russian lounge at the Kennedy Center before an opera, where she might sit with someone she did not know. "Excuse me, but is this seat taken?" She declined selfies, pictures. "I'm sorry, I do not take pictures." Many times when she arrived, everyone would raise, clap, and cheer. She was like all of us. She had duties, family, and friends. The Scalia and Ginsburg families were friends. The spouses were gourmet chefs and traded recipes. I would have loved to have sampled some of those dinners. She loved tea. She was the first woman justice to wear a feminine collar with her black robe. She was considered to belong to the liberal wing of the court, while Scalia was the conservative wing. Yet they respected each other, something all of us should try to do. I admired her determination and her focus. I didn't agree with her 50% of the time, but understood her reasoning for the stands she took. She was for peaceful, forceful discussion, and mostly stayed away from political bias, but like all of us, she had an opinion. She was a real person with poise and grace. We will miss her, but we will forever be grateful for her tenacity and strength as she forged ahead into the male-dominated world of the court system, encouraging all of us to seek our dreams, passion, and live a good life. That would be the greatest tribute we could give her. So in this time of political upheaval, let us follow her example and listen, respect, and peacefully discuss our differences. Let us take a deep breath and remember who we are and how we all can honor the rules of law to bring about justice. Peace be with you, Justice Ginsburg, and with our nation. J. Ackerman Werner is the self-published author of the Cello Maker series and a Rantoul native who now resides in Washington, D.C. Traveling So Life Does Not Escape Us by Ian Wang. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, people's lives have been rather stressful. Since my wife works intensively as one of the first responders at Carl Hospital, the whole family felt we really needed to take a break and escape temporarily from this unusual work and life situation to regenerate ourselves. We took a break for 10 days, and my family drove more than 2,000 miles, passing through 7 states to visit the Shenandoah National Park, and visited my wife's parents and our daughter's family. Unexpectedly, the first day on our trip, a Facebook friend shared this quotation with us: "We travel not to escape life, but for life not to escape us." Though we do not know where or from whom this quotation comes, it totally inspired us and changed the whole atmosphere of our trip from trying to temporarily escape the stressful life during the pandemic to capturing the life experience under such an unusual circumstance. From a philosophical point of view, we have been offered the gift of crisis. The Greek root of the word crisis is to sift, to shake out the excess and leave only what's important. That's what crises do. They shake things up until we are forced to hold on to only what matters most. The rest falls away. Because of this positive and appreciative attitude toward life, we found the entire trip valuable and enjoyable. Though physically we had to keep social distancing, mentally and culturally, we felt so much closer and caring to the people and the natural world we had encountered during the trip. On our way back home, unexpectedly but sadly, I got an email from Rantoul Press editor Dave Hinton, who informed me the Rantoul Press would cease publishing, and this would be my final column of Art Equals Life in the newspaper. It's hard to believe my monthly column started in 2007. It is focused on mainly local artists, art, and social cultural life for the last 13 years. For about 10 years during the Boneyard Arts Festival month in April, My Prairie Village Retirement Center sponsored the art exhibition site for our Rantoul community and got many local school students and local residents to participate. Due to the popularity and large number of participants, the column featuring the festival artists and artwork on display had to be split into two parts and published in the press for two consecutive weeks. Therefore, in total, I wrote more than 160 columns and featured several hundred artists and their artwork during the life of the column. At this final issue of the Rantoul Press and my last column, I do understand that, without an end, there would not be a new beginning. Therefore, I would like to take this opportunity to thank my readers in Hinton for years of interaction and for our shared social-cultural life together by borrowing what former U of I art professor Peter Bodnar autographed for me. Thank you for being a part of my life. Also, I want to emphasize that in the process of writing my columns, I got to meet and to know many good people, and I learned so much. As a conclusion, here I would like to quote what I learned from my most recent trip to the historical home of Thomas Jefferson in Monticello, Virginia. Jefferson wrote to Henry Dearborn, Secretary of War, on June 22, 1807, quote, "The field of knowledge is the common property of all mankind, and any discoveries we can make in it will be for the benefit of yours and of every other nation, as well as our own." End quote. The museum display label describes, "This quotation is transcribed exactly as Jefferson wrote it." Dr. Ian Wang is the curator of the Spurlock Museum and can be contacted by email at wangyu@illinois.edu. As we have no death notices for this week, we will now have an article from the sports page. Gossett finishes on a high note. Saving your best for last is an often overused cliche, but in Jonathan Gossett's track career, it might be totally true. In the final track meet of his career, Gossett found himself running at a track on which he will have many opportunities to run, the University of Illinois Indoor Track Facility, also known as the Armory. The former Rantoul Eagle cross country and track runner, now a freshman at Illinois, ran to an indoor personal best time of 4:48.70. While it was his best indoor effort in the metric mile, he could have run even faster. For most of the race, he was frozen in the second lane. He was only 2 seconds from his outdoor best time of 4:46. "The 1600-meter run was my favorite event on the track," Gossett said, reflecting on his career. "To me, it was simply the perfect combination and balance of speed and distance. The only low point of my entire career was the fact that my final season was canceled due to this pandemic. I was hoping to make the state prelims in the 1600-meter. I was hoping to run faster than 4:30 during the outdoor season." During his track career, Gossett not only competed in the 1600-meter, but the 3200-meter and the 800-meter run. He posted respective career best times of 10:28 and 2:08. He was also a regular participant in the 3200-meter relay and the 1600-meter relay. He has a split of 55 in the 400-meter when he was a member of the 1600-meter relay. "Indoor season got me in good shape as I did not miss any practices and attended all meets, and before that cross country did that," Gossett said. "I will continue running and working out to stay in good physical shape, but not being a member of a team or a group." He was also a member of the cross country team for 4 years and posted a career best time of 16:10. "I had some great experiences at RTHS," Gossett said. "I was able to have a myriad of experiences, not only in track and field and cross country, but yearbook, band, and other groups. I was able to do that and still keep my grades up. The coaches I was fortunate to have were able to help me do well in both sports. I plan on running some 5,000-meter races and build up to a marathon, but it will not be the same as competing with a team like it was in high school." Because of his combined success in athletics and academics, Gossett exits Rantoul Township High School with many awards. Athletically, he was RTHS's most valuable runner in 2019. He was also a team captain for 1 year on the cross-country team and 3 years running on the track team. In 2016, as a freshman, he was named the most improved runner. He was also named RTHS Athlete of the Week during 2018, 19, and 20. He also earned the United States Marine Corps Distinguished Athlete Award and Three Sport Athlete Award from 2017 to 2020. Academically, the Gossett earned RTHS Scholar Athlete Awards for 4 years running. Also from RTHS, he was honored as a Pursuit of Excellence Student Athlete Exemplar Award in 18, 19, and 20, Sons of the American Revolution Award, Student of the Month, and Larry Weaver Social Science Award and Excellence in Modern Media. And now from the editor, Dave Hinton. Let's see. How does one close a newspaper? I'm not sure how to do this. I've never done it before. Say goodbye to a newspaper that is closing. That's what is happening this week. The press is publishing its last edition. It has been said that newspapers are the first draft of history. Now the Rantoul Press is history. That's not to say area residents still won't be able to get their news in print. The News Gazette will expand its coverage of the county and will aggressively cover Rantoul, and I will be right in the middle of doing that. We've been sensing the press closure for some time. Let's just say 2020 has been rough on a lot of businesses, and newspapers aren't immune. The COVID-19 pandemic has left businesses, individuals, and families shaken and stirred. It's changed the way people have done business and lived their lives. Newspapers have been an endangered species for years. The virus just helped things along for the Rantoul Press. We've seen our ad inches decline as people found other uses for their money. Some advertise in the Ripley's Believe It or Not that is known as Facebook and other social media. Others rely on word of mouth. Others just hope for the best. Even so, it's difficult for a newspaper to survive when expenses surpass revenue, and that's what has happened. Ownership has cut back as far as it can and finally had to pull the plug. The internet hasn't helped, just the opposite. I've said many times to anyone who will listen, I don't understand why newspapers started giving away their product, the stories on the web, and yet still expected people to continue to buy the newspaper. Of course, many people still prefer to hold a newspaper and get the news, not look at a computer or phone, but evidently not enough of them. I've covered many memorable stories since I started at the press in 2006, from the 2013 Gifford tornado to the local man who rode up to a Rantoul bank in a taxi, went in and robbed the place, to the announcement of the building of the Rantoul Family Sports Complex. What's happening to the press, sadly, is happening all over the country. An old fart of 66, I have always enjoyed the challenge of putting out a newspaper, the challenge of getting everything done, the challenge of finding something to write about when little is going on, or finding the time and space to cover everything when there's too much going on. I've always preferred covering small town news and have had no desire to cover the goings-on of a metropolitan area where there's too much concrete, too much crime, too many people. Maybe it's my upbringing on a farm coming through. I don't know. That's why I found working at the Rantoul Press a joy. Sure, it hasn't always been easy, but I've met a lot of good people doing this job, and I want to take the time to thank all of those who have helped along the way. Those who have taken their time to talk on the phone or in person or via email to answer a reporter's questions. Also to the many present and former co-workers and correspondents. I'm looking forward to what lies ahead and hope I can contribute to covering the area. I'm not sure of all the ins and outs, but since it's newspaper work, I'm sure I will enjoy it. 2020 will be remembered for many bad things. One thing I will remember is for the year the newspaper started 145 years ago breathed its last. Turn out the lights. The party's over for the press. I'll miss reading with you every week. This has been Tamara reading the last of the Rantoul Press.